know a place where we can go to lay the troubles down, eating your soul. I know a place where mercy flows. Take the stains, make it whiter than snow. Like a tide, it is rising up deep inside a current that moves and makes you come alive. Living water that brings a dead to life.
This is Crosswalk with Gino Geraci.
We're going down to the river, down to the river, down to the river to pray. Yeah, yeah.
Hey, good afternoon and welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is Gino Geraci. So glad you could join me on the program, Crosswalk with Gino Geraci. It is, of course, the program where we typically take your calls and answer your questions about the things you care the most about. And, of course, we talk about the Bible. We talk about worldviews. We talk about world religions. And sometimes we talk about the past, which includes the subject of history. Sometimes we talk about the future, which includes the topic of prophecy. And sometimes we talk about the here and the now. And sometimes the here and the now sort of begins to blur into what looks like the future. And of course, all eyes are on the Middle East. You may or may not know this, but several different news outlets yesterday I reported have said that we've hit ground zero with Iran. Iran has literally enriched enough uranium to make not one, not two, not five, but six nuclear devices. And so Israel is literally at a break point. And we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in the Middle East and where several of my friends, including Joel Rosenberg and Amir Sephardi and several other people, are reporting literally live from the Middle East that they've been told that in less than 48 hours, perhaps even as much as 24 hours, the war could escalate. You know, it was Oswald Chambers who said, "We pray when there's nothing else we can do." Jesus wants us to pray before we do anything at all. And you know, the Bible says, don't be anxious about anything, but pray about everything. And of course, there is a growing sense of concern about what could happen. Jonathan Feldstein, who is the inspiration from Zion Host, has literally posted at ChristianHeadlines.com. And at ChristianHeadlines.com, he has this headline. He says, and I quote, "Live from Israel, where the threat is real." This is Jonathan Feldstein. He says, and I'm quoting him, "If you've been following the news, Israel is on high alert, bracing for an attack by Iran and or its proxies." And pause in the article, because the proxies, of course, include Hezbollah to the north, the Syrian Brigade to the east, Hamas to the south, the Houthis to even further south. And so there is this growing sense of what's going to happen. And again, this is coming from a number of different sources. Both United States and Israeli intelligence reports consider an attack on Israel to be a matter of not when, as a matter of when and not if. And the president of the United States went so far as to announce today that we have every reason to believe that an attack is imminent. And the challenge, of course, is this attack going to be insufficient to cause a counterattack, or will the attack be so severe that Israel has no other choice but to respond? So following news in Israel, it feels like every other article, every other commentary is about one or another aspect of this Iran planned attack. And again, that an Iranian attack will be big enough to hit Israel hard, but not too big to draw Israel and others into a wider geopolitical, or dare we even use the term regional, conflict. And so that Israel is jamming GPS all over the country. And you might be wondering, well, what does that mean? If GPS begins to be jammed, remember they have satellite systems that can jam GPS over Israeli airspace. Why would you do that? Well, Israel jams GPS over Israeli airspace to prevent precision GPS-guided missiles, either from Hezbollah in the north or Iran to the east, from hitting their targets. And, of course, the big question on a number of different people's minds is whether or not Israel's anti-missile defense system can literally meet the potential challenge. And U.S. officials at this very moment are instructing their embassy staff not to leave big cities until further notice. And so, as you can imagine, the war itself has severely impacted tourism, the economy, and there was a brief hiatus where reservists were told that they could go home, but now those reservists are being called up again. And so what, if anything, is this doing to the negotiations to release the remaining 133 hostages who are being held by Hamas in captivity in Gaza? And again, you've got this pressure both on Israel and even on Iran, as world governments are telling Iran, do not launch an attack. If you launch an attack, you will create a wider conflict. And Israel's home front command is instructing Israelis on how to prepare for an attack, supplying homes and bomb shelters, and generally preparing, dare I use the old-fashioned American term, to hunker down. So how is this going to impact the upcoming Passover holiday and the preparations for Passover? And again, my friend Joel Rosenberg, other people across the Middle East are reporting with some sense of urgency that this could all happen within 24 to 48 hours. And when I had Joel Rosenberg on the program, we talked about the inevitability of a confrontation with Hezbollah to the north of Israel. What the mainstream media isn't reporting in large numbers is literally hundreds of thousands of Israeli citizens in the north have had to flee the northern border with Lebanon, and of course, Israeli citizens on the south have fled that border. And there is good reason to believe that no Israeli citizen is going to return to the north or the south until they feel that it's safe. And so now you have this situation where people are wondering, do we engage or do we attempt to kick the can down the road for yet another generation? But one thing is clear: the genocide against the Jewish people and the destruction of Israel, well, it can't take place. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to join me on the program, the number is 303-873-1935. Happy to take your call, 303-873-1935. That's the number if you want to join me on the program. And in the past, I've also reminded this audience that if the war escalates, or if Iran directly engages Israel, or if Iran calls on its proxy Hezbollah in southern Lebanon, it's going to be problematic. Hezbollah is a much more... The word I'm going to use is a much bigger foe. Now, again, Israel has repeatedly said that they have the capacity and will respond in whatever way is appropriate to whoever threatens them. But as I pointed out earlier, a war, because people say, well, is this necessary? Well, 100,000 Israelis have been evacuated from their homes on the Lebanese border. And that whole area has been turned into one vast ghost town. Hundreds of homes and other buildings have been hit by Hezbollah rockets, missiles, and drones. This is happening on a daily basis, and now even an hourly basis. And the threat that Hezbollah poses... they have between 150,000 and 350,000 long-range and precision missiles that will allow them to hit all of Israel. And as a proxy of Iran, they have to be stopped because the threat is no longer tolerable. Now, the way that I would put that is, well, it was never really tolerable. People in the north and the south and some of my friends have basically lived in the hopes that literally we can figure out a way to go forward. But then October 7th happened, and that literally changed everything. Hey, if you want to join me on the program, 303-873-1935, that's the number. If you want to join me on the program, happy to take your call. Happy to take your calls about, well, anything having to do with the Bible. There's another really interesting story, and I want to get to it, and that is an FBI arrested a teenager who planned to attack churches on behalf of ISIS, the Islamic States in Syria. So that story was picked up at the Dennison Forum. My friend Jim Dennison, who writes daily for the Dennison Forum, and he usually posts at ChristianHeadlines.com, but also at the Dennison Forum. And he has an updated article today on the situation with the FBI. Because they arrested an 18-year-old in, of all places, Idaho, in what they called a truly horrific and violent plot to attack churches this past weekend on behalf of the Islamic States in Syria. And according to an FBI investigator, quote, his plan involved using flame-covered weapons, explosives, knives, a machete, a pipe, and ultimately firearms. And the would-be terrorist also stated, quote, his intention to die while killing others on behalf of the Islamic States. So now this was thwarted in Idaho. And think about that, where you think, okay, I'm in a safe place. I'm in a relatively conservative place. I'm in a place that is well-armed. But again, it's very, very interesting what's unfolding. 303-873-1935. That's the number if you want to join me on the program. And of course, in related news, FBI Director Christopher Wray told the American Bar Association luncheon in Washington, D.C., quote, "The foreign terrorist threat and the potential for a coordinated attack here in the homeland, like the ISIS-K attack we saw at the Russian concert hall a couple of weeks ago, is now increasingly concerning." FBI Director Christopher Wray said October 7th, "and the conflict that's followed will feed a pipeline of radicalization and of mobilization for years to come." And again, pause, reflect, consider. Are things more stable or less stable? More chaotic or less chaotic? It was geopolitical analyst George Friedman who popularized the concept of the meta-narrative. And this meta-narrative, this is a nation or a group's cultural DNA or overall purpose. And I've been saying this for several months now, that George Barna, in his analysis, came up with the recognition in his research. He basically said that his research shows that deep fragmentation is profound in this country. George Barna said, "My new national research shows that our nation is deeply fragmented." And then he went on to say, "In fact, we're divided to the point where I believe Americans have lost the capacity to develop a united perspective on who America is and how we will move forward together." Recently, in a protest against Israel, protesters in the congressional district of Rashida Tlaib started chanting, "Death to America. Death to America." And when the congresswoman was asked to condemn the remarks of her constituents, she wouldn't do it. She couldn't bring herself to say, "Hey, you know what? And again, she's right. In America, under the First Amendment, you can say whatever you want to say." But it reinforces what George Barna is saying, that we are so ideologically, politically, culturally, in every way, so deeply divided. George Barna basically said that it's not a political majority that is going to save this nation. He talked about a spiritual renewal. He basically asks and answers the question, how can we bridge the growing divisions in our country? And again, what is it? What are those core principles? What is the ethos of our country that makes our country possible? And so in his research, he said the clearest indicator of this fragmentation is the finding that the overwhelming majority of American adults, 92%, embrace a worldview that he describes as syncretism, which is a fusion of disparate ideologies, beliefs, behaviors, and principles culled from a variety of competing worldviews into a customized blend. He basically said only 4% of Americans have what could sociologically be described as a biblical worldview. Maybe the time has already passed. 303-873-1935. When we come back, I'll tell you why the Islamic States explained why they hate the West. We'll be back. Happy to hear from you. The number is 303-873-1935. If you want to join me on the program, easy peasy to do. You literally just pick up the phone. You dial the number 303-873-1935. And, of course, our producer is happy to pick up the phone. He'll ask you what your question is. And, of course, Johnny will ask you, hey, what's your question or comment? And we'll be happy to put you on the program. 303-873-1935. Before we go back to what we were talking about, the Middle East and some of the challenges, and then what was in the news that the FBI broke up an 18-year-old plot in Idaho to terrorize a church. Geopolitical analyst George Friedman basically talked about the concept. Why does ISIS, the Islamic States in Syria, why do they hate the West? Remember, they believe that Israel is the little Satan, but the United States of America is the big Satan. And when they were listing their grievances, they included, well, the presence and prevalence of secularism and atheism, and then the transgressions against Islam, and then the West's general refusal or disbelief in Islam. In other words, the West's refusal to embrace, submit, join Islam. And then it talked about the transgressions against, like, the military operations and military presence in the Middle East and tactical incursions. And the group added that even complete withdrawal from the Middle East wouldn't stop the violence. Why? Why? And the reason, of course, is, quote, our primary reason for hating you will not cease until you embrace Islam, unquote. So pause and just think about that for just a moment. Remember, we're back to what I talked about, George Barna's finding that America is a hodgepodge, 92% embrace a worldview known as syncretism, which is a fusion of disparate ideologies, beliefs, behaviors, a customized blend that, for the most part, doesn't include the ethos of Islam. So in order to confront, protect, dare I use the term, figure out who we are, that's the challenge. The challenge is, well, whoever we are, do we want to be Muslim? And my answer is no. No. 303-873-1935. That's the number if you want to join me on the program. And again, at ChristianHeadlines.com, Jim Dennison says, and again, if you want to join me on the program, it's 303-873-1935. He quotes Michael Lind, who is a professor at the University of Texas at Austin, who previously taught courses on American democracy and foreign policy at Harvard and Johns Hopkins University in Virginia Tech. He writes, in a deeply researched article published this week in Tablet, he notes, quote, most Americans, though not all, from 1776 onward have shared and continue to share a common language, a common culture, common values that transcend particular religious groups, unquote. And he says, while we are a melting pot composed of people from all over the world, our democracy works because we share what Lind calls a coherent national community in which we embrace foundational values that transcend our government charter. Now, I'm going to pause and say that that foundational values that transcend our governor or our governmental charter is this lingering idea based on a Judeo-Christian worldview, the lingering idea that human beings have value and dignity because they're made in the image of God. Not that we are a part of literal unguided processes that just happen to emerge in a naturalistic sense, in an evolutionary sense. But again, there's a growing group of people who believe that absolutely, that we are the products of unguided processes. But Professor Lind said, again, what remains is more likely to be a failed state along the lines of Lebanon, Somalia, than a flourishing democracy. In other words, he said, he warned that if the larger elements of a common American culture are thrown out by our society, if the common elements of our culture are thrown out, what remains is a failed state along the lines of Lebanon and Somalia. Now, again, I'm going to suggest to you that that the ethos of America has been what I would call reason and the way I would put it is that we're a country that would appeal to law and reason. So imagine if you're living in a world where law and reason are no longer valued, then what do you have that's left? And then Jim Dennison writes, if public polls are any indication, we're already headed in that direction. He writes, according to Pew Research Center, public trust in our institutions have fallen from near 80% in 1964 to less than 20%. Now, again, when it talks about public trust in institutions, what is it talking about? What are the institutions it's making reference to? It's making reference to government. It's making reference to the judicial system and the legal system within that government, but it's also making an appeal to churches and religious institutions, but it's also an appeal to educational institutions. A recent Gallup survey charts a precipitous decline in American satisfaction with the way things are going in the United States from more than 70% in 2004 to 23%. So, Jim Dennison says, if you were to ask an American of my parents' World War II generation why our nation exists, they would likely have said that we serve to protect and promote democracy around the world. And if you ask an American today what would they say, and would any two answers agree with one another? Our God is a loving Father who wants to bless us. He invites us to open our mouth wide. It says in Psalm 81:10, and I will fill it. So, again, why does our nation exist? Well, my answer is to glorify God, but is that what it's doing? 303-873-1935. I'll be right back, taking your calls, answering your questions. The number is 303-873-1935. Let's see who's up. Larry, welcome to the program.
Hi, Gino.
Hi.
How you doing?
Doing good.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, great. I'm going to try to get to right to the point. I'm in a marriage situation, and I really don't like to refer to it as a marriage. It's just marriage on paper. And I'll give you a couple of scenarios here. Basically, we've gone to two different marriage counselors. One time it was a male. Second time she wanted a female, okay? And it helped a little bit. But I'm just tired of the manipulation and going to the marriage counselors. I just think it was all for show, so she could just, like, you know, have something on record that she could say, well, she was the one that tried to make it work. But
you wouldn't let her. But you wouldn't let her.
Yeah. But
I'm not laughing because it's funny, because obviously it's not funny.
Yeah, I understand. I understand completely.
So you've been to two different marriage counselors. Let me ask you a question. Do you go to a church?
Yes.
And have you talked with the pastor or leaders or someone who's wise, who understands things, who's mature and biblical? Have you talked to someone in your church?
Well, yes. I didn't talk to the pastor, but I met with one of the deacons and told him what the situation was. And he said that, you know, we all go through marital problems. And he told me, just to paraphrase, he told me to stay the course regardless of what she does. And then she'll begin to wonder, well, you know, why is it that I'm walking around the house or whatever, and I'm in peace, and she's like, you know, gee, I just can't seem to get to this guy. And then the deacon also said that, you know, he understands that he's not the one, you know, living in the household with her. Now, let me say this. I want to try to, maybe I contradict myself, but I'm going to say it anyway. I don't want to say that it's her, because I know God can show me, well, okay, you know, you're trying to put it all on her, but this is what is in you. But again, I'm just done. I'm just tired of the woe is me. You know, if something goes wrong, it's like, you know, she acts like it's the end of the world. So, and I blame myself. I prayed to God and asked for forgiveness for letting this woman, what I describe as manipulating me into marrying her. And it's just a bad situation. And I tried to, you know, give some descriptions, but all it take was spend a day, maybe not even a day, just a couple hours, you say, yeah, there's something seriously wrong here.
How long have you been married?
Been about 8 years now.
Do you have kids?
Well, it's from a previous marriage. My wife, she passed away in 95.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't get married to my current wife until 2014.
Right.
And she has, I have a son, and she has two sons from her
marriage. Previous marriage.
Right. And even she don't like it if I invite my son over, which I don't invite him over as much as I'd like to. And I don't like it when she's invited her family over, and, you know, we're at odds against that too.
Yeah, that doesn't sound right. That's not healthy.
And
so how can I help you?
Well, I've read, of course, I've read, you know, I read in the Bible and I listen to commentaries from, you know, from pastors. And, you know, the Bible says that, you know, you're to stay married, that God hates divorce. And that there's only certain situations that, it would warrant divorce. I'm just trying to see if I can get try to answer your question. I'm just trying to see if if this is a situation that God still wants me to be in. I heard a caller that you had, I believe it's been over a year ago, that she said that she divorced her husband because she was tired of him accusing her of this and that and the other. And you told her that, correct me if I'm wrong, you told her that, people don't go to hell because they get a divorce. They go to hell because they don't have a right relationship with God. And
right, that's what's not at risk. Yeah, this isn't an issue of if I stay married to this woman, I get to go to heaven. And if I if I don't stay married to the woman, I have to go to hell. That's not what's at issue. And the way I would frame the issue a little bit differently, I would say, what is the purpose of marriage? The Bible says, therefore, a man leaves his mother and father, cleaves to the woman, and the two shall become one. The purpose of marriage is so that you could experience unity. The primary purpose of marriage is fellowship, companionship, mutual help, comfort. It's to create a stable home where children can grow and thrive. And, of course, the best marriage is between two believers to produce godly offspring. Now, again, unity is based on trust and respect and affection. And so what I would probably do before I start trying to figure out the options for divorce, I would quite bluntly say to your wife in this case, I would say, hey, honey, are you happily married? What would she say?
She'd probably say no if she's being truthful.
Right. And if I said to you, are you happily married?
No.
Then here's what I would say to both of you. You see, you do agree on something.
I don't hesitate on that.
Yeah, you both agree on at least one thing, that you're not happily married. And then I would ask the question, what would it take for you to be happily married? What kind of trust and respect and affection has to take place in your marriage where you would go, hey, wait a minute, I'm really glad to be married to you?
Okay.
Just ask her that simple question. Are you happily married? And what are you willing to do to be happily married? And then ask yourself that. Or say to her, now you ask me the question. And then
tell her. All right, Gino. Thank you so much.
Well, and start there. Obviously, that's not the end, but at least that's the start, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, bye-bye.